Biden has a Palestine problem, or at least it's starting to look like it. Back in November 4th, a couple hundred thousand pro-Palestine protesters marched in Washington, D.C., and they were protesting the Biden administration's stance on Israel. At the time, those protesters were criticized by a lot of Democrats who were saying, basically, yo, why would you protest against Biden? Do you want Trump back in office? And for a long time, Biden's approach to the war didn't really seem to be changing all that much. But since then, the war hasn't stopped. It's gotten worse. And the protests have not stopped. Fast forward to just a few weeks ago when this movement starts up almost overnight in Michigan to, instead of selecting Biden for the Democratic nominee or even one of the alternative candidates, to select uncommitted. Now, these activists were hoping to maybe get 10,000 votes and thinking that would send a message. But then they got 100,000 votes. And that got them two delegates. And this has caused the kind of domino effect. A lot of people, even journalists, weren't really taking them seriously back then. But now it's pretty clear that you're not going to be able to ignore the uncommitted vote. One of the reporters who was taking this seriously from the very beginning is Evan McMorris Santoro, who just happens to be one of my old colleagues. He was interviewing the activists in Dearborn right as all of this was happening. So I brought him on the show to talk about it. Let's get into it. Yo, yo.
Hey, Dexter. You're looking great.
My man, you look good too. Yo, it's been a minute.
It's been a very long time. It's been like at least 4 years, I'd say.
I think not quite then, because I've seen you since 2019. No, you know what? Damn. It might be 4 years. In person,
pre-pandemic.
It might be 4 years. Yeah, it was pre-pandemic, so that makes it 4 years. Woof. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing pretty good, you know. I'm coming at you from Manhattan here to WeWork, where I'm, you know, make my bones these days. It still exists, and you can still WeWork in it.
So for those who are not aware, Evan and I used to be colleagues over at a company which is also going through some things.
Yeah, no kombucha taps over there at all anymore.
Man, they don't even have the dude, when they got rid of the Diet Coke, we knew it was, we should have known. Did you know about, were you there when they got rid of the Diet Coke?
I wasn't. The last thing I heard about Vice was this amazing thing that the guys from the Cyber podcast, the day they all got laid off, they popped a podcast because nobody could stop them. They, like, no one had access to this. And so they were just like them on there talking about what it was like in the final days. And the story they told was that there was no cereal, there was no food, there was no really anything, but there was like tons and tons of milk everywhere.
Yes.
That the milk kept coming in. That is the funniest story I've ever heard in my life. Like, what is this milk just keeps arriving and nobody has any way to stop it?
No, that is that I was there every now and again. I would go to the office and yeah, there would just be an incredible, just an unfathomable amount of milk. And I don't understand, because like milk goes bad. This is the thing.
Yeah.
If it was just that there was milk left over, kind of like what happened? There was ginger ale there for a really long time. It was because nobody was drinking ginger ale. Look, ginger ale, I understand. It's in cans. That stuff keeps. If it's just chilling, it's chilling. Whatever. They kept buying milk. Nobody stopped the order for the milk, and the milk just kept coming. And you'd go there, and it'd just be cartons and cartons of milk.
Listen, the story to do is on the milk guy who had that contract and just kept coming in and being like, they don't need milk, but I'm going to keep bringing it because these checks keep clearing. So I guess I'm just going to keep bringing it.
Because
obviously they must know the guy who was in charge of the milk deliveries. You know, it's hilarious.
Just big dairy, man. I feel like that's the conspiracy theory. It's not go woke, go broke. It's not any of that. It's legitimately big dairy brought down Vice. That I'm not actually saying this, by the way, but I would love for somebody to clip that, and that just becomes that the going conspiracy theory that somehow big dairy brought down, you know, news.
I mean, it was such an interesting life cycle to go, because like you and I started the first day. I started the first day of Vice was, I think, your first day of Vice too. Mm-hmm. And I had been like campaign reporter. I was on the campaign trail. So I was like wearing like this like shitty Joseph A. Banks suit because I had to wear a suit all the time. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I look kind of like I look now. And I'm like, you know, stumbling in there, never done TV before. And you like are in there and you have these, I remember you had these shoes, these sneakers on them with like these big wings on the back. And I'm like, this is the coolest motherfucker in the world. I can't have the same job as this person. That makes no sense. This doesn't make any sense. There's no way this is real. And then it turned out that like it was real. We made this kick-ass show for a couple years, and then Big Dairy came in, pulled the plug on it all.
Yo, speaking of, you know, yeah, because we started, when we started, this was 2016, 8 years ago, and it was the election, it was, you know, it was full swing. Here we are back again. And you've written something that I'd love to talk about, which is the the uncommitted vote. Like, should we call this an uncommitted vote? But this is a, it's a movement that I think the reason I wanted to talk to you is because the analysis that I saw you and your co-writer put together, it was earlier than a lot of other people's analysis. And I think we're going to talk about this, but y'all were kind of early in actually taking this seriously as political analysts. So I'd love to talk about this. So what is uncommitted? What is that?
Well, first of all, Dexter, thank you for noticing that. Like, this is a thing that my colleague Tinashe and I like caught the fever on this and jumped on as quickly as we could. In summary, if you ask me, I think that uncommitted is one of the most interesting things happening in politics right now. You know, this is a year where it's funny because we talk about 2016, and that was, you know, Trump was on the ballot, and then he was on the ballot again in 20, and now he's on the ballot again in 2024, and it's Biden again. And a lot of people, I'm getting the sense, a lot of people feel like this is just a retread. This is a year where change isn't part of the conversation, where we aren't seeing anything about, like, what can people who are really angry, what can young voters, what can people who aren't, you know, 80 have to do with politics right now? And uncommitted is that thing. And it is this thing that's really changing huge amounts of politics right now. So basically what it is in certain Democratic Party primaries across the country, not all of them, like around, I don't know, 10, 15 of them, 20, something like that. The on your ballot, if you go to vote in your primary, it doesn't just say, you know, Joe Biden, Marianne Williamson, Dean Phillips, and then that's it. You got to pick one of those three. It also has a line that says uncommitted or like not committed to any of these people. Like, basically, it's a none of the above line, right? And this has been there for a long time because there are a lot of people in the Democratic Party who don't like the presidential choices, and local parties want to have the people come out and vote in the other primaries on the list. And so the idea is, look, come out, if you know, make your voice heard. If you don't like these guys, you can go ahead and say it. You know, we're open, you know, small D Democrat, Democratic Party, let's do it. The thing that happened this time around, and in every cycle, you know, people do it. Like, you know, people come out and they, you know, they're mad for whatever reason they're mad. Right. What happened this cycle is that a bunch of activists, predominantly starting in Michigan, which has been a very important state for the general election, also a place where the primary is, has an uncommitted line, just like about a month ago decided, hey, we are not happy with the Biden administration policy towards the government of Israel in this war that's going on right now. We don't like it. We think that the government should call for a ceasefire. We think that there should be a whole different set of actions towards the government of Israel. And they said, why don't we get together and see if we can all vote uncommitted and see if we can make our point known. Now, they started this, like I said, like a couple weeks into, like, early voting had already started in Michigan. These people had like $200,000. They put this whole thing together, and they very rapidly built out this political machine, all, you know, mostly young people and people from, you know, Arab American descent, for the most part, but other different people, other activists who were involved in this fight. And they went and they set a target of 10,000 votes in Michigan. And that target was because that was the margin that Trump won Michigan over Hillary Clinton in 2016, which effectively flipped the presidency over to Donald Trump, right? The huge surprise in 2016, Michigan was never supposed to go for the Republicans. They did it. So like, well, look, if we can show there are 10,000 people who are this mad, maybe the Biden administration will change their position.
Right.
Turns out.
Because that was a margin that made a difference in 2016. Yeah. So if we can prove, hey, look, that same margin that you're scared of, that's 10,000, doesn't sound that big, but it's significant. If we can get that, we can show Biden, hey, yo, you need to do something different now.
Exactly. We need to show the Democrats they can't afford to lose these people. And one of the things about Michigan is it has a huge population of Arab Americans. The reporting I did was in Dearborn, which is the headquarters of Ford, but also happens to be an incredibly diverse place with a huge population of Arab Americans, to the point that it's like, I have to say to anybody who's watching, if you're looking for a place to go, you don't have a lot of money, you should go to Dearborn, because the food there is amazing. Because if you want to have like, okay, I want to have North Yemeni food tonight versus Southern Yemeni food, you can get that in Dearborn. Like, yo, if you want to have, you know, like if you want to have like from this one region of Lebanon, their version of hummus, you can get it. Like, it's amazing. It's an amazing, amazing place. So
really diverse.
Putting all that group together, having everybody work together, they went ahead and they did the primary. And it turned out that their 10,000 vote margin was way, way conservative. And they got 100,000 votes in Michigan. That was enough to actually win. What it means is that uncommitted won two delegates to the national convention in Chicago this summer, which is where the Democrats will formally nominate Biden. People who have seen this before on TV, it's like a lot of speeches and stuff, but it's basically the moment when the Democratic Party is like, okay, we're all united, we're going to do our thing. So anyway, first they got their delegates there. This created a cascade event where now people all over the country popped up with their own. And in Minnesota, they picked up some more delegates. In other states, they picked up some more delegates. And actually today in Washington State, it's expected that they're going to pick up some more. Their voting in their primary ends today. So what ended up being what started out as a protest movement, and I the most important thing about this, why it's so fascinating to me, and we can get into all the nuts and bolts of what happens next, but just to start at the beginning, people who you saw in the streets, people who went out that were upset after what was happening in that region after October 7th, those people, they first did their protests, they did civil disobedience, they caused a lot of attention, they drew attention to themselves, they created, people were paying attention to what they were saying, they changed a lot of the narrative around this. And then they decided to go and turn it into electoral politics, and now they've turned it, and it's the exact same, it's the same movement of people, it's the same energy, this idea that like, there's no youth movement anymore, there's no outsider movement anymore because everybody's 80 years old. That's not true. Young people and people who are mostly shut out of politics, they're the ones who are right now driving this entire thing. And it is really, really important inside Democratic politics right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna pull something up right now. I mean, even, and just to take a quick look at it. So this is this is from November 4th. So I think you'll remember this, that there was a pretty massive protest in D.C. and all over the place. And this is November 4th. And I remember seeing this. And so this is former co-host Samir. This is this is one of the later pieces that Vice News put out.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can see, I'm run it without audio here. You can see that the crowds are pretty huge. And I think, you know, and we've continued to see that. I mean, there was one in LA, just this last weekend. It was as big as one of the first ones that I went out and covered. So this has not gone away. But again, as you're saying, it's not just in the streets. This is starting to translate into something that's a little bit harder to ignore.
That's correct. Like, that's exactly right. Like, so honestly, we all remember, you know, the past few months, and, you know, first there's the attack, and the attack, you know, American politics knows sort of how to respond to that, which is mostly to, you know, back the Israeli regime. That's what the Biden administration did very strongly, back the Israeli government at the beginning. And this protest movement led people, I think a lot of people who are in mainstream politics, to start to think differently about what they were seeing over there. And now that it's had this electoral movement, I think that this uncommitted movement has now shown them that actually this might be something that could have a problem at the ballot box for them. And that's why I think you're seeing part of the reason. I mean, it's not just me who's saying this. It's that prominent Democrats are saying that you're seeing changes in language from the Biden administration surrounding this war. You're seeing changes in policy from the Biden administration surrounding this war. And people trace this back to those protests and through the uncommitted movement. So that's sort of what this is. And so where this uncommitted now, this is sort of the tip of this conversation now. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about it is that now these people who have sort of wanted to do this protest vote, they did the protest vote, and they found themselves in this position now where they have to now go out and turn these votes into actual delegates. And what delegates means is that when we go to Chicago to cover this convention, there'll be people on the floor of the convention who will be, you know, protesting and talking about their issues in a very, very prominent stage, a place where Democrats do not want to showcase any sort of disunity whatsoever. Right. And so what they have to do now is they have to figure out how to turn these votes into delegates, which is not a very easy process, actually. It's a little bit more complicated than it looks. But the reporting that we have done is that they've already kind of started building out the organization to sort of figure out how to go about taking this to the next level. But I think if you look at this whole thing as a series of phases, this is the phase that will, you know, they have to sort of get inside the Democratic Party itself, inside the Democratic machine, and figure out how to win a delegate. But and you have to do that through various, like, essentially a lot of meetings with a lot of, like, very serious party members that, like, the people who show up to everything the Democratic Party does. Mm-hmm. You have to go in there, and you have to bring your own people in, and you have to convince those people to vote for a delegate to the convention that represents the actual politics of uncommitted, not just is uncommitted, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's a little bit hard to wrap your head around, because I think if you're not, if you haven't heard of it yet, it's, oh, uncommitted just means you haven't decided yet. No, uncommitted is a protest vote, essentially, is what it is. But it's wild to read this, because I mean, as I read this article that you wrote, it's pretty clear. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, that the people who put this together, they were surprised at how many votes they were able to get. And I should say here, in all the speaking with any activists I've ever spoken to, it, any activist or anybody, you know, who's working in any sort of politics, they'll overpromise. They'll often overpromise. They'll say, hey, look, we're expecting to get X amount of people. And, you know, they'll tell you double, triple the amount that they think they're going to get. So it's usually inflated. In this case, they got 10 times what they were telling people that they were hoping for. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and kind of incredible.
I'm not sure where their 10,000 number came from. I kind of went to Michigan because I think that it felt kind of low, given that in previous elections, without any sort of issue, more people have voted uncommitted than that. But
yeah.
I think but that doesn't take away from your point that they were definitely surprised. And yeah, I can tell you they were definitely surprised, because the day I was there that day, and you know what I love to cover more than anything else, I mean, I'm at this new site called Notice Now, we're a nonprofit, and it frees me up to do stuff that I wasn't able to do at some of my previous jobs. And what I like to cover really more than anything else is the nuts and bolts of how things are actually done, right? Mm. How do we actually, people always want to know, how can I affect change? How can I be part of the conversation? How can I be part of the process? And it feels often, right, we're in a time of conspiracies and things like that, it feels often that what's going on is that people can't do anything, that there's some kind of machine above them or mechanism or secret cabal of people that run everything. So I'm interested in how people actually do this. And so what happened was, is that thanks to the power of modern campaigning, which is that it's very accessible to people, and also thanks to the sort of machine, the political machine that Bernie Sanders built in 2016 and 2020, this group of activists was able to take $200,000 of money that they raised and do a very complex phone bank system. They knocked thousands and thousands of doors. They did everything that you do in organizing a politics. They did it very, very quickly. And they found that because they had a message people wanted to hear, or people were interested in hearing, that they got 100,000 votes, a number of far higher than anybody predicted that they were going to get. And that's true all over the entire country. The number has been higher than anybody has predicted in all the states that have gone after that. And
yeah,
it's because of people are able. So part of what I did is I went to this place and I saw how they built this out, and they just sort of have these you know, they have a phone bank you can do through your computer. You send it to people and they make phone calls to people and tell them about it, what's going on. They had all these volunteers come in from outside that they used. They leveraged some of the email lists created by the Bernie Sanders campaign through this group called Our Revolution, which is no longer associated with Bernie. But this group shared the values of what the Uncommitted Project was doing, and they helped them out, and they brought in all these volunteers from outside. And you just really had this mini campaign run on a shoestring by complete outsiders that really shocked the system. And that is what I think is the most interesting thing about Uncommitted right now, is there is that now the challenge for them is, can they shock the system again by sending an actual number of delegates to the floor of the convention to make sure that every time any conversation happens, what Uncommitted believes in is part of that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, let's even just go through some of the numbers here. I mean, you said in your back when you wrote the article, which was last week before that, something like that. This was a while ago. Yeah. And you, so
it all happens fast these days.
Yeah, I mean, everything's quick. But you wrote this ahead of Super Tuesday, and then in that article, you said that in North Carolina, I believe they were looking for 5 to 7% Uncommitted. Looking at this number here, it is 13%. It's basically double what they were looking for. Now, the caveat to this, that we're looking at NPR here, the caveat to this that NPR points out is the last time that an incumbent Democrat was on the ballot, so this would have been 2012 when it was Obama, No Preference got 21% of the vote. But still, going all the way down here, there's also a really wild large number in here. Hawaii is 30%, almost 30% Uncommitted, which, that being said, only about 1,600 voters actually participated, so it's a small number. But that means they get 7 delegates. I mean, this is kind of wild.
It is wild in the sense, because look, in past elections, you think about like 2012 or things like that, where you didn't come a president on the ballot, people did vote uncommitted, but they vote uncommitted for any sort of number of reasons. Because it's not that uncommitted is the name of the project. It's that this is the line on the ballot. So
right.
I could go and vote uncommitted because I didn't, for whatever reason, I don't like that Joe Biden doesn't wear enough red hats or whatever it is I don't like.
Yeah.
But in the case, and there's been organized efforts in the past, but in the case of this, it's pretty clear that the people who are doing this are mostly circulated around this protest movement. And look, the important word here is protest. This is not actually going to deny Biden the nomination or prevent him from having a convention that is all about him. It is not, these things are not going to stand in the way of that, but what they are is they're loud enough that they can't be ignored. And that's why it's so interesting to go back to those protests you were talking about in the streets. Because it can be difficult to wrap your head around this if you think about this, like, well, they're not winning. They're not going to win. Well, they're not going to win. I mean, they're not going to stop Biden from becoming the nominee.
Right.
But in the same way that people got on the streets and blocked the streets, and people who are on the streets had to think about what they were saying, this is the same thing. And so even the organizers will tell you, you know, these people do not like Trump. They do not like, they're not excited about the idea of making Trump the president or anything like that. They feel like they have to protest, so they're protesting. And so this is how they're doing it. And so those numbers are very high in the sense that they show that Democrats have more of a problem here than I think that they thought that they had. It doesn't mean that they have a problem that's big enough that's like Biden has to, you know, quit or something like that. It just is a situation where, like, these people said over and over, you don't understand how mad people are. And Democratic establishment kept saying, I don't know that that's really true. I don't know if we believe you.
Yeah.
Now they believe them.
Okay. So that was going to be my next question then is, you know, I've seen the article, I've seen the headline, and I even kind of have toyed with it too, which is, does Biden have a Palestine problem? I think I've seen that around a few places. But so this is the question is, does Biden believe that he does? So we saw, and maybe you can break down what was said at the State of the Union. You can break down what's been said about ceasefire from Kamala Harris also. But I think one of the things that I had been curious about is that it's obviously clear that there are a really large amount of people who, as you said, are really unsatisfied and angry with how the U.S. in general, but Biden specifically now because he's the one in power, is handling Palestine, is handling Gaza, is handling the war. Are they taking that seriously?
Well, I can only tell you what other Democrats are saying, which is, you know, you've had prominent Democratic, prominent Biden boosters and prominent Biden supporters who are saying that, yes, they are hearing people. They understand that this is happening. The Biden administration sent two high profile members of its administration, plus the campaign, plus senior campaign staff to Dearborn ahead of the Michigan primary to try and talk to these people and try to sort of like ask them not to do this. And when you go to the State of the Union, you look at the State of the Union, you know, Biden talked about trying to increase the amount of aid going in. We saw him meeting with the Israeli opposition leader in Washington. There's been a lot of like, you know, the sort of DC style reporting of like the scuttlebutt is that they're pretty upset with the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. So there is all sorts of things. There are all sorts of indicators that suggest that something is shifting. And, you know, when you look at things shifting, a couple of factors can be in play here, which is, you know, all manner of things. But one of the main things to look at is what has changed. What has changed between the time when Democrats would never say the stuff that they're saying now and now? And what has changed is a very vocal protest movement that has not let its foot off the gas since it got started. And I think what's also happened is that the sort of news coming out of that region, you know, has been difficult to spin away a different way, things like that. But like the main thing is like this movement seems to be having some impact. So at the Biden, you know, at the State of the Union, you know, Biden talked, you know, a lot about the idea that we need to try to move this thing into a situation where we're not, civilians are being more protected, things like that. Again, I'm not speaking for any side here. Uncommitted would say none of that is enough. They're not happy with any of the stuff that's being said. They want a permanent ceasefire. They want a lot of significant changes over there. I can just tell you as a political reporter that what you're watching is you're watching the Democratic Party shift its position slightly. And I think that it would be impossible to say that that's not in large part due to this movement.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I think one thing, and this is again, viewing as somebody who's not a, you know, if you were in the politics lane, I was in the culture lane. And so obviously those two cross over. You cross into that as well all the time. Right. And so I look at this as seeing that as you mentioned, I mean, Michigan having a huge Arab American population, I don't know that traditionally Democrat Party has paid that much attention to it or even really felt like this is something that is kind of a symbol of, hey, we're doing a great job. What I've felt a little bit more like, and I mean, Republicans will try to, you know, throw this around too, is, oh, they're basically saying that they're doing things for Black people, but they're not. You know, this is what Republicans often will say. And, you know, and I think, you know, I don't want to really discount either argument on that, but just to say that I think what I'm seeing here is something that is clearly being participated in by a pretty diverse amount of people, but you're talking about the people who are leading the charge on this, you know, really leading the movement. And that's a group that I don't know that Democrats are quite used to paying attention to as much.
That is what they told me in Dearborn. I mean, the Democratic side of the line of this argument is this. The mainstream established Democratic Party side of the line is this, right? That like the Arab American vote turned out in big numbers for Biden because when Trump was president, he tried to do a Muslim ban. We all recall when people went to the airports to try to, you know, we were trying to ban people based on their religion. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of the Arab Americans who live in Dearborn are not Muslim, but a lot of them are. And so there's a lot of, you know, a lot of feelings about that. And so they turned out for Biden in big numbers in a place where they felt what it was like to have Trump as president over them. And the Democrats will point to the Republican side of the ballot right now and say, you see who's on there, right? Like, you see who's coming back, right? You see what they're doing, right? And that to them is like, they're like, you know, the exact same reason you didn't like him before, or you were afraid of him before, you should be afraid of him now. And that was a large part of the conversation. And what the people in Dearborn told me, it sounded a lot like when I went to Ohio, to a place in Ohio during the early days of the Ukraine war, where it was a place full of Ukrainian Americans who were like putting together aid packages and sending money over there and doing everything they could. And they talked about how personal this was for them. Well, over in Dearborn, people, they aren't just talking about this as a political thing. They have family in the region. They have friends in the area. You meet people who are Palestinian Americans who have their families very connected to their. This is a thing where they feel this very personally. And so while I do think you can find a lot of people who will say that Biden, they don't think Biden cares about them. Mm-hmm. What I heard a lot of was that they were like, we don't have a choice here but to pressure the only person who's the president right now. Like, this is so personal for us. This is so real for us that this isn't, we're not thinking about anything beyond kind of trying to make this thing change right now. But I do agree that there's a lot more going on here with groups all over the political spectrum demanding to hear have their voices heard in different ways. In this case, you mentioned it started, you know, it was not a huge surprise to a lot of observers that like Dearborn or like Michigan, that does have that huge Arab American population, did vote as largely as it did. But in other places, you talk about North Carolina, you talk about Minnesota, which has a sizable, but not that much. What you're seeing is a coalition that has a lot of young voters in it. Like, it's places where like college towns are and things like that. These are another huge, hugely important electorate for Joe Biden. He needs young people to turn out. And again, their argument to young people is, you hated Trump before.
Right.
That's who they're putting up again. This isn't like, the fact that it's the same election doesn't mean that it's a different argument. It means like, it's the same thing you did. But those young people are also saying, like, there's more that we want than just getting in behind you because you're not Trump. And like, that is a thing that I think Democrats have got to figure out and have to deal with moving forward, because they obviously have to have a very unified party if they want to beat Trump, who has pretty much dominated his whole party. So it's kind of like, it's the right protest at the right time. Like, it's like getting into exactly where Democrats are worried that they're not doing a good enough job, which is building that coalition and building a strong group behind Joe Biden. If you're seeing vocal small portions of that spinning off and saying, I don't know, I'm not feeling it, I'm uncommitted to this, that is kind of it hits a certain paranoia and a certain fear that the Democrats have of trying to beat Trump again.
Yeah, man.
If that makes sense.
No,
that's a very political answer to your cultural question.
No. So I like it, because I think one of the main criticism that I saw really early was, what on earth are you people doing? You're protesting against the only person who's going to save you from going through another 4 years of Trump, right? And I was seeing this in November, which I understand where that comes from. I clearly understand where that comes from. I wonder if you've had that conversation with some of the people who've led the movement of uncommitted, which is, what do they say to people who say, hey, by doing this, you're sowing disunity, you're splitting people, you might make people not show up to vote for Biden when it comes to the actual general election. You might actually send us into 4 years of Trump. Do you want that?
I absolutely have had that conversation. It's the number one thing that comes up when you first head out to cover these stories. Like I said, I'm interested in the nuts and bolts, but this is sort of the politics of this.
Yeah.
And I will say this. So what the leaders told me is, they said, hey, you know, we're not a monolith here. Like, what we ask people to do is vote uncommitted on their primary ballot. And if you go there and you go to the ground and you watch this thing play out, there are certain people who are with a group that they call Abandon Biden, which is like, they're like, I'm never voting for Biden again. I'm over him. Forget it. I'm done with it. That's it. I'm so mad about what he's done, or what I perceive that he has done, that I'm not going to vote for him ever again.
Right.
And there are other people who are like, of course I don't want Trump. Of course I'm not going to. And when it comes to November, I'm going to have to hold my nose and do what is needed to keep that from happening. I'm not sure that they don't really want to talk about November that much. Their main thing is they're talking about what they're doing right now. Obviously, November is part of that conversation. And as I mentioned, you know, in a place like Dearborn, that is, as it's not just that it's a bunch of, you know, single belief people. It is just a people from all over a region of the world that live together. So like, there's a lot of diversity in those opinions as well. Some people there, you know, the Palestinian cause is important to them, but also like a Muslim ban is very important to them. So right. We'll see how that all plays out. And
there's different religions, as you said, like not everybody's Muslim there. You can be Arab, you cannot be Muslim.
Different countries.
Yeah, exactly.
Different everything.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the biggest hard. This is one of the hardest things in Palestine. I mean, this goes right back to what you're talking about, which is that one of the most annoying things that politics does is, especially when people like me look like me talking about it, is people get put into like some kind of box, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, well, these Arab Americans. Well, I mean, Arab Americans. It's like could be like any number of like a dozen countries, plus all over a diaspora all over the rest of the planet,
yeah.
Plus different religions, plus different politics, plus different plus, right? So mm-hmm. so the leaders of Uncommitted, they sort of bring that up. They say, look, we're not a monolith. We don't know what people are going to do in November, and they have not made any sort of strong positions. Some of their prominent backers and boosters that they've had have been more clear that they specifically do not want people to try and stop Biden in November, that basically that they're like, you should make your protest now, but when it comes down to it, we got to keep Trump out. Some people have said that, and some people have said, who cares? We don't care. Like, they're all bad, so I don't care who it is. So it's not completely clear yet how that is all going to play out. It does seem clear that Biden and his team and the Democratic Party believes they have to do some work to win people back to the November conversation. That's why you're seeing this political shift, right? Because like I said, Biden can't lose the nomination. There's nothing that can happen now where he won't be the Democratic nominee going forward unless he chooses to drop out himself.
Right.
But other than that, this is all a November conversation. So when they're looking at those numbers coming out of Uncommitted, when they're looking at those numbers coming from young people, and they're like, okay, we need to shore this up, they're thinking about November. So they obviously think that they have work to do there. The movement itself is not specifically aimed at trying to keep Biden out of the White House. It is aimed at getting people to vote Uncommitted in a protest vote during the primary season.
Right. To hopefully shift policy, essentially, is what you're saying. Hopefully
it's a protest.
Policy. Yeah. I mean, speaking of not everybody votes alike or whatever, and not everybody's a monolith. One thing I've really found interesting is if we can shift to another population that I know a bit about, think you know a bit about, you know, maybe I have a bit more expertise in this one thing. This has been, I think this is something where, and this is interesting, right? And I'm not even going to say necessarily that this organization is got the pulse on everything. However, I do expect that probably in DC people are reading this. And one of the main takeaways is that their findings from interviewing a bunch of black people and white people in December, we have to say this is what is in December. So things may have changed because coverage has changed. Situation has gotten markedly worse over there. This thing right here that I highlighted. So this is the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. The headline is Black Americans' Opinions on the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. And one of the big takeaways is that Black Americans' findings toward U.S. President Joe Biden largely remained the same after the October 7th. It hasn't really changed except for independent voters and young voters, as you said, young voters who both felt slightly worse about Biden. And so, I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons that we could probably speculate here. I think they'd probably be correct, you know, church being one of them. But, you know, probably a bit of, frankly, old-fashioned American insularity that also exists within black communities. Same thing. I think increasingly Americans don't pay all that much attention to the world around them. But this is my analysis, of course. I'm not putting that on you. But that just being said, that this isn't always a white non-white thing. I think this particular issue, this I'm reading this as much more of a supposed ideology issue, like a belief issue, like this is what matters to me. I think what is happening is wrong, or I think what is happening is right.
Interesting point. I mean, I you know, I'm not sure. I have not done much reporting about what Black Americans specifically think about this war or how this might change their vote. That thing that you point out with young people, that reminds me of something that has been in a lot of my reporting over years and years, which is that the generation gap that exists in all, so much of the electorate definitely exists in the Black electorate, right? Yes. It definitely exists in that.
Yeah.
And so, and so you see changes based on age and things like that. You know, it is not anybody's prediction that a foreign policy issue would be what would decide an American election. It very rarely does. It's not something people care that much about.
Yeah. In almost in basically any almost any demographic, that's not going to be what decides it. Almost.
Yeah. I mean, usually has not been. Like, there are not a lot of elections you look back on and you say, "Oh, it was the foreign policy thing that did it." It's usually something else. It's usually, you know, people always say, "Oh, it's the economy, stupid." It's like usually the economy or something else having to do with that. So, you know, again, when it comes to this, I'm not sure exactly what that electorate is going to do in November. There's been a lot of conversations about numbers shifting in ways Democrats don't like there. But the fact that you have the young people part, that is the thing where, you know, Biden was very strong with young people who, you know, didn't like Biden didn't like Trump in 2020. And he's hoping, you know, he needs them to turn out in big numbers again, because, you know, the Republican Party is pretty much full square behind Trump at this point. There is, you know, there are some people who, like, you know, are, you know, going to ride or die Haley or whatever they're going to do. Right. But I think it's fair to say that the, you know, we've seen just in the recent days, and this is a little off topic, but in recent days, you know, an actual Trump family member has taken over the Republican Party operation at the RNC and has, like, begun firing people right and left. I mean, it is being rebuilt in his image. This is a party that's going to go forward. It may not be successful, but it's definitely going to be what Trump wants, right? Mm-hmm. That is not in, you know, Biden isn't exactly there yet with his coalition. And his own team will say that. His own campaign has said that to me on multiple occasions, that this stuff that they have to work on. But it is important to keep track of. This is why it's so interesting when having this conversation to me to keep focusing on that word protest, because protest is also, it's a fundamental constitutional right. It's a completely important, one of the most important parts of the American governmental system is your right to say what you think and protest. And it doesn't always mean that you're going to, you know, win or, like, you know, change everything overnight or whatever. But in the case of this movement, I have not heard anybody say our plan is to take Biden out. You know, we're taking him off the map. We're going to, you know, we're going to, like, knock his, you know, we're taking him out of the nomination. We're going to, like, defeat him in November. They're just saying we have to do something. We have to protest at this moment. And it can be hard for people who don't have such a close focus on this issue, right? Who don't think about this every day, like people, like many people who are younger, who are, you know, involved in the social media conversation about this, or people who are from the region or related to the region do, you might just say, like, why in the hell would you go after Joe Biden right now?
Right.
Like, we have
right.
Trump to deal with. Are you insane? Like, what are you doing? And it's there are dangerous. a lot of people in Democratic coalition that are saying that exact same thing. These people are uncommitted, is up against a lot of headwinds of people who are utterly confused as to why it is you would make life more difficult for the Democratic nominee in a world where Trump is steamrolling towards a presidency, right?
Yeah.
Their argument, like I said, is because we have a, you know, we have a piece of this and we know about something. And the fact that they have such support from young people, they may be able to argue, like, well, we know about the future. And the future is very important to anybody who's involved in politics.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure they answered your question at all, no. Really, but, like, I tried to weave my way in there.
It does. No, it does. I mean, as you were saying that, you know, this uncommitted thing is has some headwinds. Let's look at the numbers of the headwinds real quick. This right here. So just in terms of delegates. So as of now, like, the graph is kind of wild. So we're looking here at a graph that shows Biden is well on his way, almost to 2,000. Uncommitted is looking at 20 right now, as of the last count. Could increase slightly, but we're looking at about 1%, roughly, of what Biden's net delegates are. So I guess my question is, of course, we know that this is, I mean, it's a 1%, it is a protest vote. What physically does this mean when delegates are sent to the convention? What do they do?
Okay. Here's where things get really, really, really nerdy. So we're all gonna think back to that story I told you about how Dexter had the shoes with the wings on them, and I was wearing the suit, and I'm gonna put my suit back on, and we're gonna go back. Okay, so here's the deal with this. These delegates have got to be chosen by the Democratic Party apparatus, as I mentioned. It is extremely possible, it would be if the Democratic Party, the Biden administration, for example, Biden campaign, wanted to put an end to this right now, and they wanted to say, these uncommitted delegates, we're going to have people that we want as uncommitted delegates. They could get those people in, and they could stop this thing dead in its tracks right now. I have no reporting to indicate that that's going to happen. In fact, I've had reporting goes the opposite way. People expect them not to do that because they feel like if they were to try to prevent these delegates from being seated, which they could do, that they would create a huge problem for themselves, right? They would just amplify this. Now, what happens is that every state, when you vote in a primary election, you are voting for delegates to go to a national convention. This goes to back in the day when the way the president was actually, the way nominees were actually chosen was at these conventions. This is your classic story about smoke-filled rooms. Literally, people didn't know who it was going to be until they had these big conferences and all the Democratic Party bigwigs, guys who were involved in their county party and their city party and their state party, would, you know, get together and smoke cigars and decide, and all guys at this time, I might add, and decide who it would be. So there's still delegates are still what you win, and the delegates are what you have to accrue to vote for your nomination. It is kind of a formality at this point, because when you vote on your primary ballot, you're voting for a delegate who is bound to Joe Biden. So he is definitely going to go and vote for Joe Biden, or he or she, whoever it is.
This is also weird.
In the case of this uncommitted thing, if the people who are interested in protesting about Palestine can get their people to be the quote uncommitted delegates, right, the ones who represent uncommitted, they can get sent by their state party, because their state party all have bylaws and rules, and these people have one delegate slots now, so they have to send some delegates who represent the term uncommitted. They have to represent that vote one way or another,
right?
It just depends on what they're actually going to say or do. So that's the role of uncommitted. The project is to make sure that people are pouching it. We get that. Anyway, so yeah. You go from there. They get sent from their state party up to Chicago, which is where the Democratic National Convention is. Mm-hmm. At the Democratic National Convention, they vote on the nominees for the vice presidency and the presidency. They also vote on a whole ton of stuff having to do with party laws and party opinion and statements and things like that. And if you're on the floor, you have a chance to speak and say what you want to say. And, you know, we've seen this in the past. When Hillary won the nomination in 2016, Bernie asked his delegates to, you know, sort of go. He like was not into them protesting too much, but they did. A lot of the people who liked Bernie didn't like Hillary, and they showed up and they talked about it. They mentioned it. They made changes to the party. They made changes to the way the party worked. They voted. They used their voting power. These 20 delegates are not enough to make any significant changes, but, and well, for some, there might be more to come, right? Because you're going to see what happens in Washington and other states moving forward. But every time delegates get to talk, these delegates also get to talk. Uh-huh. So that's important. That's number one important. The second thing that's important is that there are going to be a lot of poorly suited people like me running around that Chicago Convention Center trying to get interviewing people and trying to tell the story of where the Democratic Party is at right now.
We got to get you. We got to get you a tailor, man. Come on. I know you dress better.
I know.
Than that
it's
now.
True.
You dress better than that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not back in print now, so I might be wearing pants right now. There.
Not wearing pants in the WeWork. You're about to. You got. Hey, they're going bankrupt. They don't have enough money for security. It's all right.
That's what I'm saying. No, but anyway, so the point is, so every time a reporter's running around trying to tell the story of what's going on at the convention, these people will be part of that story, right? Mm. Again, it's all about that idea of protest. Right. It's there will be people probably in the streets protesting a lot of things outside the convention. That always happens. But then you have protesters inside the room, in the room where it all happens, having their conversation where it is. Again, I don't want to make it sound like this is so completely like a battle. There are a lot of Democrats who agree with what these people have to say. That's what they're winning Democratic votes. Let's not forget.
Yeah.
And I think that there are people who might welcome some of this conversation and being able to sort of make what they think is a smarter future-based move that's a harder political move right now. Mm-hmm. But regardless, this is what has to happen now. You have to have all these hoops that have to get jumped through, because uncommitted doesn't mean anything other than uncommitted. So they have to. So Michigan has to send two uncommitted delegates to the national convention. Those could be people who show up and say, actually, I've changed my mind, I'm for Biden. They can do whatever they, but if they get the right delegates in, then they'll have this, they'll be in this whole part of it. So this is the whole nerdy part of it. This all sounds so incredibly silly and ridiculous and nerdy, but it is effectively the same as blocking an intersection with your fellow protesters so people can't get to work that day. You're not trying to shut down that person's job for the rest of their lives. You're trying to make sure they have a chance to think about this before they go to work that day, right? Right. And the people are very mad at you. They don't like you at all. They're very mad at you. They wish you weren't doing that. They don't understand what you're doing and saying. Maybe eventually they change their minds, whatever. But so a lot of this is...
But you're forcing them to stop and think. You're forcing them to look at you. Yeah.
And having delegates on the convention floor is such an unexpected result from October 7th and October 8th. And for the Democratic Party to have that fight happening on the floor of their national convention, even in a very small way, is something that most party elders did not see coming. And that is what the power of it is.
Have you seen anything like this? I mean, you've been at this for a sec. And I mean, I can't think of anything. Somebody brought up in chat right now, the closest thing they can think of is the war in Vietnam in terms of a protest vote. But that seems fundamentally different because we're not sending troops to die there. That seems like it would be different to me.
I think that's right. I will say, you know, I am actually reading I try to stay into what, like the historical, things that are like that. Oh, I can't think of the word right now, but like the
precedent.
Metaphors for this moment. So I just read a book about the 1968 election when Nixon got elected, which was a very surprising thing to many people in American politics at the time. And it was dominated by the Vietnam War debate. Right. Mm. And the sheer scope and size of that debate is something that we can't even think about. Those of us who were alive for the Iraq War can remember some very strong protest movement back then, but even that did not reach anywhere near what the Vietnam War protest movement was about, because the Vietnam War, as you said, there was a draft, all sorts of things going on. Mm-hmm. And also it affected everybody, a much larger group of Americans, just beyond the fact that there was a draft. Just like America was involved in the war.
Right.
People had been war veterans and things. You know, this thing, like you mentioned, this is... It's, you know, sad to say it, but, you know, it's like a foreign policy entanglement. And we've seen this conversation with Ukraine, too, that there are a lot of people who couldn't even imagine the idea that the United States wouldn't do everything it could to fight Russia on a land war in Europe. But there are plenty of people in America now who are like, why are we doing this? I don't care about this. I have no interest in this. Mm. And despite the fact that we are seeing so many people who are as interested as they are right now, and it is such an amazing driving force in political conversation right now, there are people who are like, what are we talking about? Like, I'm pissed off because I can't afford my rent, or my jobs aren't, you know, my job isn't good, or I don't feel like I have any sort of control of my own life in America. What do I? I'm not involved in this. I'm not Palestinian. I'm not Israeli. I don't know. So it makes it for a different moment. But in terms of the fact that the Vietnam War protest and the Democratic Party's inability to wrangle it led to a huge problem for them in 1968. They lost a ton, by a ton to Nixon. Some other things got in the way, right? There was like a couple of assassinations. I mean, it was a different kind of politics than we have now.
Yeah.
But there is a sort of a through line that Democrats could have got America into Vietnam, couldn't sort of figure out how to deal with the fact that nobody really wanted to be there. And they end up turning over the government to a guy who said that he was going to get them out. And, you know, did eventually, but not before not doing what the protest movement would have actually wanted him to do, right? He was not, Nixon was not their guy. But anyway, so I do think it's an interesting, the commenter is exactly right. There's an interesting crossover there. It's not exactly the same, but there is this thing of like, people are upset right now, and they're upset at the Democrats. And the Democrats, at Joe Biden specifically, let's say. Right. And so if he can get them back on side, he'll be in much better position in November than he would if he doesn't. And so I think you're seeing him try to do it. Whether or not that's enough or it does, I can't tell you. But I think you're seeing that politics play out. I also like to comment where somebody mentioned that being a delegate is being invited to the worst party, the worst arena show in middle America. It's not wrong. One of the highlights is Politico magazine or Politico website and CNN host a grill where you can go into and get like a cocktail and have like a sandwich. That's sort of like the high point. It's not like a music festival, you know. It's not that fun. It's
the high point.
Yeah. So it's pretty smart.
Well, thank you for getting out there and doing the hard work of going to the worst arena show in the Midwest, so that I guess I don't have to. But yeah, man, mm-hmm. is there anything? What should we be looking for next, man? I mean, you were covering this early, so where do you see this going? Where do you think that the protesters themselves see this going?
So, like I said, tonight. In the next coming days, because Washington State votes in a very weird way. It's almost all by mail. So we won't know the full results of their primary probably till the end of the week. But take a look at that space. See how Uncommitted does there. I expect it will do very well. I think that might be their best place after Michigan. See what happens with their with the delegates there. And then the next thing to look for, and I will be following this. I'm going to go – this is like – my dream, I guess. I'm going to go all the way down to all these conventions and see how they choose these delegates, because we're going to see what the Democratic Party does, the Democratic Party establishment, mind you, what the establishment Democratic Party does with these hundreds of thousands of protest votes. Do they welcome them in? Do they try to keep them out? Do they try to silence them? All of these things are possible. And we're going to, at Notice, we're going to try to keep track of what actually happens and see what happens, because as I told you, I think this is the most interesting thing going on in politics right now. And I think it is that thing that shows that despite this being a moment where a lot of people I talk to out there in the country feel like, what are we doing? Why do I care? What does it matter? It just shows that, like, in democracy, like, if you still want to raise your voice and raise it loud enough and have something to say people care about, you can have an impact. And I think, you know, it's very cheesy to say this, but like, I do feel one of the things we did at Vice and that show that we did, if you didn't treat the audience like they were stupid. And the fact of the matter is, people who are tuning into this and watching this, like, you care at some level about democracy. Like, you think it might actually could be a thing that might actually work if it works correctly. And I'm telling you that, like, even in this weird time where it seems like the nominees nobody wants are the nominees and the campaign is going this really weird, still, a couple people got together in their house in Dearborn, Michigan, and completely fucked with the president's universe. So, like, it's important to remember that that is still possible. That is what I'm thinking about. And in the future, we'll see how far that can go.
Protests work, apparently.
You know, sometimes.
Yo.
Listen, I asked HBO very hard to keep the show on the air. That didn't work. That was a protest.
Well, yeah. I mean, hey, some people can be – well, so is what you're saying that the U.S. government is easier to negotiate with than HBO? Is that what we're saying here?
Definitely, yes.
God bless all of us. Evan, thank you so much. I'm gonna post your info so people can find you. I mean, you can see the Twitter handle. You're still on Twitter. God bless you, doing the good fight. I left that place years ago. You're in the trenches, man.
I'm doing my best.
You're doing the best.
I love it. And also come check us out at notus.org. That's notus.org. It's a new nonprofit, nonpartisan publication. We're doing really cool stuff. The mission's really good. I'm really happy with it. And I just got to say, Dexter, this is like your natural place to be. This is great. This is so cool. Like, I think you should need to be. I hope that this blows up so big that you can cause one of those riots in Times Square like that kid did with the sneakers or whatever, with the Xboxes. PlayStation, right? PlayStation. Union Square, PlayStation. I want you to get Union Square, PlayStation riot big on this.
I cannot tell you how much I don't want that to happen. how much that would utterly terrify me. But so should I take that as a sign that I could call you up and have you back on at some point?
Anytime. I love this.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much. Everybody, please go follow Evan so that you don't have to wait for me to have him on for the next time to actually know what's going on. But again, Evan, thank you so much, man. Appreciate you.
Bye-bye.